And welcome now to the midday for a Tuesday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio for an hour of live music with Johannes Wallman, who is the director of jazz studies at the UW-Madison, and rounding out his seventh year, which seems hard to believe. Time has passed that quickly, but welcome back to the midday, Johannes.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And jazz studies, of course, covers a broad area, but how did you come into jazz?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've been playing music since really before I can remember. My parents started me out, you know, with early childhood music education, and over time that turned into piano lessons and classical piano lessons. And it wasn't until my mom and I moved from Germany to Canada when I was 12 years old that I discovered jazz. My middle school and then the high school had a jazz band, and I got recruited to play in the band and liked it. And then one day when I was waiting for a music lesson at the local music school / community college, there were some older kids, college students, and one of them had a boombox and was playing this wonderful music for the other one, and yeah, check this out, you know? And it sounded just amazing, and I hadn't consciously heard anything like it before, and I got up the nerve to go up to these older students and ask them, you know, what is that you're playing? And they said, man, it's Miles Davis.
Uh-huh, okay.
I took a mental note.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the next day I asked my mom to drive me to the record store and looked for Miles Davis recordings, picked up a couple, loved them, and kind of went from there.
Of course, he wasn't a pianist, but you were, and so how did the two fit together at that point?
Just sort of trying to figure out what was going on in the music. I'd go to the piano and kind of try to copy the sounds that I heard, and so I tried to copy it by ear. And the beautiful thing about the piano is you can really emulate the notes that any other instrument, except for really the drum set, everything else you can play the same notes on the piano, which is why we can have these wonderful orchestral reductions of full orchestras played on just the piano. So whether it was Miles playing trumpet or Charlie Parker or Coltrane on saxophone, pianists have always tried to figure out, well, how do I do this on the piano?
And it seems that, classical music has always had an element of improvisation, but it seems as if jazz really lends itself even more to improvisation and players who can improvise.
Yeah, it's really at the core of jazz. I think you're right. It's an important element in classical music as well. But the ensemble music hasn't been a major part of classical ensemble music. It's been something that the soloist would do, a solo pianist.
Liszt,
of course, is famous for his improvisations. And, the keyboard instrument in general in Baroque music is the continuo and cadenzas and so on. But it's typically one person, whereas in jazz, improvisation is really it's a group effort and it's a group conversation. I hear a saxophonist, a bass player plays something, and I respond and change my playing in response to what they're playing. Choose different notes, choose different melodies, and they in turn respond to me.
And they somehow know when to come back in?
we're playing a composition, which it sort of gives structure to the improvisation. And it's a little bit like the composition is a story that, we're familiar with the story that we're about to tell. We know the characters. We know the basic plot line. And, so that kind of keeps us together. But at the same time, everybody also has the freedom to go on a tangent, to elaborate on something, to maybe take a shortcut somewhere along the way as well.
Well, like most classical music, some jazz, a fair amount of it, is composed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a composer.
Yeah.
So when we hear a piece of yours, are you going to play it the way you wrote it, or inevitably are you going to digress?
Everything I write has a lot of room for improvisation. in it. So for for anyone who's a little bit familiar with seeing printed sheet music, everything that I'm going to play in the studio today, every piece fits under one page because most of the notes that I play in it are not actually on the page. The page is sort of a synopsis. It's a summary of the story. It's the basic plot outline. The melody, as you'd recognize it if you have heard the tune before, a basic harmonic pattern and a description of the rhythmic style. And I think one of the challenges for jazz composers who also perform their own compositions sometimes is to get away from what we'd originally conceived of the tune as. If I'm playing a piece by Cole Porter or Duke Ellington or George Gershwin, there are so many different versions that have been recorded and performed over the years that I know that when I go into it, the performance practice of the piece is so wide, it gives me so many options that I can really situate myself anywhere within that. Whereas the piece that I wrote is the piece that I wrote, and so far I only kind of know my version of it. And that's a challenge as well, to say, okay, now here's what I thought I wrote, and now let me try out playing it differently and get away from it and give myself permission as the performer, from me the composer to me the performer, to change things up.
Well, shall we begin?
Okay.
With a nocturne, would you like to start with a nocturne?
Sounds great. Can we do this in the noon hour?
Yeah. I already played a Haydn nocturne in the 11 o'clock hour, so you're good to go, right, Johannes, with a nocturne.
Okay, so this is a composition of mine, and I wrote it for a quintet, and recently recorded this, but I also I thought it would lend itself well to a solo piano version as well, particularly because it was inspired by a wonderful pianist composer by the name of Horace Silver.
Sure.
I was about to record an album with a saxophonist who had Dana Stevens, who had done a wonderful recording of a Horace Silver tune piece, and I'd thought about recording that piece, but I couldn't really do it again with Dana on it because he'd already recorded it and it was wonderful. So I thought I'd use that as an inspiration and write something that's kind of evokes some of the same feelings for me. But ended up being quite a different piece, though.
Thank you.
Nocturne by Johannes Wallmann, my guest today, in our Buck studio at our Mason and Hamlin piano. And he's the director of jazz studies at the UW-Madison and performs in various venues. And coming soon, early in the new year, a trip to Cuba?
Yeah, so Madison has had a long-running sister partnership with Camagüey in Cuba. And there have been, over the years, quite a few trips of Madisonians going to Camagüey on cultural exchange visits. And these trips, they're organized by Ricardo Gonzalez, the former owner. Madisonians will now is the former owner of their Cardinal Bar. And the last couple of trips have included Madison jazz musicians as well, or Madison musicians. And this trip is going to include, I think, about 8 or 9 jazz musicians from here. And we're going to be spending 10 days in Cuba, along with some other Madisonians who are coming along as well for the cultural exchange part. And the musicians will be performing in Cuba with Cuban musicians as well, with the municipal band of Camagüey. Well, and it's really going to be a true cultural exchange in every sense of the word.
Exchange and immersion, yeah. I would venture to say.
Yeah, Cuba is such a wonderful country in terms of its musical heritage and culture. Just the popular music itself is phenomenally complex and rich and complicated and beautiful.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear how Johannes Wallmann responds to and absorbs that. I mean, I'm thinking of, for example, Darius Milhaud, French composer, mm-hmm. who in the 20s went to South America and soaked up and reproduced through his own lens so much of the music that he heard there.
Yeah, and of course today we're so fortunate in that we can easily dial up music from just about any part of the globe at the push of a button. But it's still different to be in the place where the music comes from, surrounded by the authentic players whose culture, the music grew out of.
One thing that classical French composers were good at, they weren't the only ones, but they were certainly prominent. There were Spanish composers too, early in the 20th century, who gave colorful titles to their pieces rather than just Sonata Number 4 or Etude Opus 10 Number 5 or whatever. And sometimes those titles were not terribly, evocative. They were just vaguely suggestive, but sometimes they were a direct product of an experience the composer had had. I assume, given the title of one of yours, Johannes, that you have spent some time at the lakeshore, which is an easy thing to do in Wisconsin.
Well, this is actually the first piece that I wrote after I moved here. I spent my whole adult life living pretty much next to an ocean, and teenage years too, one or the other. And so this is the first time living in the middle of the country, and I was just absolutely delighted to, be living next to a lake here and just having that water experience as well. So I wrote this piece kind of thinking about, that this is a real distinctive landmark of my new home, having these beautiful lakes here in Madison and throughout the state. And then also thinking about another distinct quality of Wisconsin life, which is the weather. So this particular piece, it's not on the written page, but when I do perform it with the band, I always make sure the band knows the story with it as well, so they catch the right spirit of it, which is, my mental image when I wrote it was that of somebody going out in one of these lakes in a little boat, and it's a beautiful day, and they're just having a lovely time, and everything is quite beautiful. And then, as often happens, the weather changes.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly that beautiful, idyllic lake becomes something a little more intense and somewhat, perhaps somewhat scary and threatening, and there's some thunder and so on. And not to not to spoil anything here, but in the end, our hero of the story does emerge unscathed, and and it all does have a happy ending.
A story that many of us in Wisconsin are familiar with, and here it is turned into music by Johannes Wallmann, and the name of the piece is Lakeshore. Thank you. So did you stay on script for that production of Lakeshore, Johannes?
Well, the thunder came in.
Yeah, it did. Yes, it did. So, that's right.
So, yeah, it did.
Long tradition of water music and weather music. I mean, Beethoven and Mendelssohn both had their Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage, and of course it goes back a long way. And the French composers, again, were very good at evoking water in its various stages.
Yeah, and then when we play the the piece with an ensemble, of course the drums can really add some thunder to it as well. And the piece might be 5 or 8 minutes longer if there's multiple soloists, and take you on a longer journey on that as well.
And now back to the piano and Johannes Wallmann, and we've heard two of his own pieces, Nocturne and just now Lakeshore. And how about your approach to songs by other composers? There are, of course, so many of them that have become jazz standards.
Yeah, so I thought I'd play a piece by Richard Rodgers and Lawrence Hart for you. Maybe some listeners will recognize this. This is Lover, and it actually has a very simple melody, and I'll just play a little bit of the melody, and then you can hear how that becomes a basis for improvisation. So the melody for the piece is... really just a simple descending line, and it was harmonized. Now there's a little middle section that's contrasting. And this, like so many pieces from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, lends itself really well for jazz improvisation, because harmonically, it's a very comfortable and familiar type of progression. So just in the first couple of measures, these two chords, of course, they go back hundreds of years, and we're used to... In many, many classical pieces. But we also have a huge repertoire of sort of jazz phrases. That we can play that fit those chords. And then Richard Rodgers gave us those same chords, just down one half step. And the same chords. And so on. So this happens to work well for anyone who actually is reasonably confident in all 12 keys, which is something we work with our students on in the jazz program. You can't just play in a couple of keys. You got to know all of them. And this piece really gives an opportunity to put that to use.
Wouldn't it be fun to hear a vocalist keep up with that?
Uh-huh.
A few little changes in there in that rendition of Lover, originally by Rodgers and Hart, and filtered through the artistry of Johannes Wallmann. We have more from Johannes Wallmann. He's the director of jazz studies at the UW-Madison, has been now for some 7 years, and is, in addition to being, of course, a pianist and ensemble player, also a composer. And modified refers to what, Johannes?
Well, to be honest, we were talking before about evocative titles, and this one is a working title. You may very well hear me play this again in the future, and at that point it'll have a permanent title, and which may or may not be this. So
so what's going on then?
Yeah, so if I just... the piece has gone through a few modifications
okay.
In this case, and... The main one being that I removed one of the beats from every other measure. So instead of sort of conventional 4/4 time, it's in 7/4. And
always fun to get those mixed meters.
Yeah.
So 7/4 time, modified for now.
I think that part of it is staying.
Modified by Johannes Wallmann. We're talking occasionally about the compare and contrast classical music and jazz, and although this particular difference, I think, has lessened over the years, there still seems to be a difference in terms of venue and audience response, both positive and negative to jazz in the venue, meaning sure they will kind of emote when they hear a riff they particularly like or recognize a tune sometimes. But on the other hand, in a lot of jazz venues, there's still this kind of clattering and chattering in the background. What's the status of that today?
Well, right here in Madison, and for that matter, Milwaukee, and hopefully in other parts of the state as well, we're this wonderful resurgence right now of listening rooms, of venues that are primarily about the music. Now, these are jazz clubs, and so as such, it's still a different atmosphere than a concert hall. And of course, around the state, there are lots of concert halls that do occasionally present jazz as well. So we've had that for a long time, but really the heart of this music in terms of its performance venue is the club the club situation, and the intimacy of the performer sitting feet away from most of the audience, and the audience really being an important participant in the music. I talked earlier in the hour about the conversation between the performers, the improvised musical conversation. And one of the things that affects any conversation is who's listening. The conversation you and I are having right now would be different if we didn't know that there were people out there in the ether listening right now. Hi, Mom. just the presence of a listener is always felt and affects how you play the music. And having the listeners right there in front of you, whether they give a little shout and clap after a solo or during a solo or so, or not, you can sense if people are really engaged with the music. And as you travel all over the world, you find different audiences respond, or even within the U.S., different audiences respond quite differently. But we have these wonderful venues now, really that have opened in the last couple of years. So here in Madison, Cafe Coda is a listening room that's all about the music. The music isn't background, it's the main event. And we also have that at the North Street Cabaret and the Arts and Literature Laboratory in Milwaukee, the Jazz Estate and the Jazz Gallery are both listening rooms that present wonderful music.
So it's changed somewhat.
But
there's still... It's interesting, jazz and opera compare this way. You don't usually compare the two, but in the immediacy of the audience response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My students often perform for a music appreciation class at UW that many of your listeners might be familiar with, called Music and Performance. And basically the class largely consists of live music performances. And we're typically, over the course of the semester, the only jazz group that the students hear. And in a concert hall with 500 people, if we play at the end of the semester, we oftentimes have to have to make an announcement after the first tune when the audience is sitting there very very respectfully and listening intensely, and they're quiet and they're paying attention, which is everything that we'd love to have happen. That's the basic building block. And then we tell them, previously in the semester you might have been told, don't clap after every tune. It might just be a movement, and you don't want to be the person who is clapping after a movement when everybody
right.
else is silent. And then we tell them, look, not only is that okay to do here, but if something moves you, if somebody's playing an improvised solo that you like, you can clap in the middle of the music during that solo. And that's just a different performance practice. So not sure one is better than the other.
Well, in a way, it's a good thing with classical music because it implies that person is relatively new to classical music or the piece, and that's, of course, a good thing.
Of course, yeah.
Always good to have new audience members. Well, where else would you like to take us?
We were chatting a little bit before this, and I don't play a whole lot of I don't play a whole lot of holiday music.
It's
we're batting around some suggestions. I said, it's not much. It's not something I play much these days. Like so many musicians, I made my living in playing background music and bars and lounges and so on in my early 20s, and that has ruined most Christmas music for me. But here's a tune that I still really like. I actually got the composer wrong. You looked it up.
I think it's Walter Kent, the same person who wrote the White Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah, so this is, I'll Be Home for Christmas, which it just has a, it just really fits beautifully with jazz improvisation. Again, gives me some of those chords that are, that are comfortable and a nice jumping off point for it, and just a lovely melody.
Thank you.
I'll be home for Christmas, in which you get to hear how a jazz approach takes each little piece of that theme or tune and embellishes it and then brings it all back together.
Mm-hmm.
That's very informational. Now, a little bit about your ensemble, Johannes.
Well, I work with a few different projects, but most recently I made a new recording with a quintet. The quintet was from the recording was a bunch of former, well, old, not former, current, but old friends and colleagues of mine from New York. And the album is called Day and Night, available on fine websites everywhere. And but then also I have a quintet that I work with here in southern Wisconsin of some fine musicians, and I believe we're going to get an opportunity to hear them on the air on January 4th.
Well, we'll be recording on January 4th for broadcast probably just slightly later on a Friday night in the new year.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
okay.
So you'll get, of course, a different take if you had the CD and then listened to one of those Friday night performance upcoming. Wouldn't be quite the same, would it?
It's different every time. In a way, what we're doing is we're making prototypes, and each one is unique.
Yes, well, that's part of the fun.
Yep.
Well, Johannes Wallman, it's been a pleasure having you grace our airwaves for the midday today, and look forward to seeing you in January.
Thank you.
Have a great
time. Thank you very much for having me.
Cuba, right after that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that will be exciting. We'll have to do another session after that to see how the Latin rhythms tie in.
Mm-hmm.